On the belated repayment of a gift of a pair. By Salarai. Read by Claire Shadows. Fandom Farscape. On the belated repayment of a gift of a pair. Aaron's eyes are wide, pupils as black as the place he's come from. He can see himself reflected there in the second between the shock and the shift when she draws the pulse pistol and aims it at his heart. "Who are you?" she says, no inflection. The words spaced evenly like nails pounded with one stroke each into crumbling wood. "John." Her head angles away a fraction so that she's looking at him slightly askance, denial in the line of her neck and in her fingers, wrapped around the grip of the pistol and in the tightness around her mouth. But her eyes are glassy with tears. Something releases for a moment, long enough for her to shake her head. "No," she says, and it's more like a noise of grief escaping between her teeth. Moya's amber light gleams in the black fall of her hair, catches the grey in it. "John is dead." Three nails pierce bone. He takes a step towards her, another. The muzzle of the pistol presses against his sternum. "No," he says. Time settles heavily, like wet snow, as she studies his face. "How?" A shifting, but not a giving way. Fear and weariness makes his body feel too heavy for something so conjectural. Only the pressure of the muzzle against his chest and the steadiness of Aaron's gaze keeps him standing. "I don't know," he whispers, his voice collapsing instead. I'm stuck. He can't lift his hand, too heavy, too far away, so he tips his head forward to the front portal where the space twists like a ribbon, so that there and here and then and now are folded together. Aaron's eyes flick in that direction and then back to meet his. Only now the stiffness of her neck has eased into a familiar curve of exasperation. "For Frel's sake, what did you do this time?" Moya holds them, John, Aaron, their son, like birds in cupped hands. In the nebula around them, young stars are spinning like tops, and bright gases and debris fluoresce against the black thrum of space. Peace. Warring factions have set their seals to the armistice. Loss. 10 tiers below them. Gianna is in Diago's quarters, sitting perfectly still. On the observation deck, John and Aaron give their boy his name. John saved the galaxy. He made Armageddon, and then he unmade it again. He reached out with his mind and fucked with the universe. Probably served him right when the universe reached back. "What happened to me?" He doesn't really know which me he's talking about, and ain't that the old tune. He's curled up behind Aaron on her sleeping platform, his face pressed against the nape of her neck. There are freckles there now. Her body is the body he remembers, and it isn't. The grey hairs are wiry when he winds them around his finger. She smells like Aaron, and she doesn't. Moya, though, is mostly the same, emptier, but as he followed Aaron through the corridors, he could feel a slight resistance, a palpable density of history, living and leaving. The deck of Aaron's quarters and the blanket that covers the two of them as they lie together are imprinted by the shadows of leaves. Over their heads, branches spread out in crooked and crisscrossing patterns, between Moya's ribs and ventilation ducts. The tree is rooted somewhere below the deck itself. The smells of earth. Of earth. The nostalgia that comes with the scent is an exquisite pain. Like the passing of a needle through skin in the stitching of a wound. He wants to know where the tree comes from, but there are more immediate questions. Where's our son? There's a long pause. Leaves rustle in the drag of the current as time sluices by through moil, slow erosion. He doesn't know how long he has before it pulls him free again. Aaron? She catches his hand to stop him from gripping her arm, and turning her over to face him, she shifts, pulls his arm around her so that she can look at his open palm. She runs her fingers along his lifeline. He's got grandchildren. She closes his hand and wraps her smaller one around it. Sebaceans live a very long time, John. Grow old slowly. He closes his eyes and breathes in the unfamiliar scent of age that clings to his skin. He says, but humans don't. No. She answers his first question at last, their hands clasped together under her chin. They don't. The first time it happens, he slips backwards, like the floor has been pulled out from under his feet. He stands at an intersection of corridors and frowns, looks left, then right. Moya, warm golden light, wasp nest smell, the harried buzz of a DID speeding off to repair something. The same. Wrong. Diago rounding the corner, stopping short. I thought you were in the cargo bay. John can't speak. Joy and disbelief, and let's face it, a healthy suspicion of his own sanity, constrict his throat. It all comes out instead as a sudden blur of tears. Diago frowns, comes forward to grasp him hard by the shoulder. What? He's got a healthy suspicion of John's sanity, too. John, he says with stern emphasis, tone he used to use back in the bad old days when Scorpius's clone was gleefully unraveling John's brain from the inside. Are you okay? He forms the words slowly and distinctly, like he used to them, at the worst times, his voice piercing the static of madness, speaking from a solid place. Not sure, John says, through a mouthful of cotton, but Diago is alive and real, and the weight of his hand on John's shoulders feels like a gift. Whatever's happening, maybe it's worth it. So John says, yeah, you know, he manages to grin. Just never mind. After another couple of seconds of narrow-eyed assessment, Diago claps him on the shoulder. In other words, situation normal. All fucked up, John finishes with him. Of all the things that John has contributed since the wormhole spat him out, up to and including crazy-ass cosmic brinkmanship, the snafu is the concept he's pretty sure he'll be remembered for. At least, it's the one that attests to a sort of fundamental affinity between his culture and the lives of desperate alien convicts on the run, which, he has to admit, doesn't say much for his culture. While he's been working this through, and some part of his brain is getting far enough over the shock of seeing Diago again to get to work on the question of what brand of fucked upness is most likely at play here, Diago's noticed John's environment suit. You planning on a little walk outside? Before John can answer, San's voice over the comm knocks him sideways again. Yes, Diago answers her, already heading away towards command. Is the human with you? John opens his mouth, but he's interrupted by his own voice, also on comm, saying, yes, the human is on his way. Ducking behind a vent shaft, John narrowly avoids meeting himself face to face. He watches himself jog down the corridor to catch up to Diago. I thought you were going for a walk, Diago says. I am walking, John replies. Observing from his hiding place, John feels the all too familiar acid burn of envy. He hangs in blackness until the current snatches him again and hurls him forward. Time travel, he realizes, is a lot like skiing. Lots of waiting punctuated by moments of blind terror. His scream is trapped inside his helmet. There you are. We've been looking all over. All right then, close your eyes. John doesn't want to close his eyes. Aaron's smiling, and there is nothing ironic in it. No subtle sadness in it. There are fine crinkles beside her eyes, as though she's been doing this a lot. He wants to keep his eyes open and let them drink and drink and drink until he drowns. Go on, she says, mock frowning now. Close them. She adds a raised eyebrow. He obeys. Fine, woman. Just remember who's wearing the pants around here. What have pants got to do with anything? He waves a hand at the natural order of things, and then quickly tucks it away under his thigh, where she can't snap it off. Shadows moving, a slight weight across his knees. Open your mouth. He hesitates, until a knuckle wraps him on the crown of his head. When the fruit touches his tongue, the memory of home it brings is so intense that for a moment he thinks the current has caught him again. But no, it's real, and now the cool, slightly gritty texture, the fresh, clear, sweet flavor. My God, he says around it. He doesn't chew, but lets it dissolve a little on his tongue so he can savor it. His heart clenches in his chest at the unexpected collision of his past and his future. Earth and Aaron. It's a pair, the first one. Not Aaron's voice. John's eyes fly open to find a boy on his lap, watching him with an elated expression on his face. He's got Aaron's eyes, the same white blonde hair John had at his age. In his hand is half a pear. Not cut long ways like John's mother used to, but across the middle so that it shows a starburst of seeds. It's the first one, Diago says again. Want more? John's sob turns into a laugh and he nods. He closes his hand around the boy's thin wrist to lift the pear to his mouth and takes a bite. Then he holds it while Diago tries some. Diago chews it with a thoughtful expression. His nose wrinkled up a little and his eyes aimed at the ceiling. Finally he says, tastes like a fillet. A little bit except not so sweet. He nods decisively. Good though. Aaron leans over the boy to wipe John's cheek with the side of her hand. And? Yeah, John says. It's good. Time flies. Time. Bandits. Time. Keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping. Gianna is on her knees, clinging to the edge of a cargo container. Her black eyes stare blindly at the deck. She flinches violently when a pulse blast tears the air above her shoulder, but she doesn't make any move for cover. Can't see, she rasps. I can't. She doesn't know which way to jump. Another pulse and her mouth opens wide in a silent wail. Crashing down beside her, John grabs one hand for the rifle she's dropped and with the other hand shoves her deeper into the shadow of the container. He doesn't know who he's shooting at, but he shoots anyway, strafing the bay entrance where the doors have either been prized open or have jammed in the process of closing. Beside him, Gianna is a collection of acute angles, like semaphore for fear. He squeezes off two more shots, then ducks back and wraps his arm around her. Pulls her close so that her awkwardness softens against him, and her face is buried in the crook of his neck. Her gloved hand tries to find purchase on the smooth skin of his environment suit, and failing, closes around his wrist. Is that you, old man? Yeah, Pip, it's me. You smell different. That would be the manly scent of bravery. Her laughter is a texture of sandpaper. Hang on, just stay here, okay? He tips her head up so he can see her face, but there's no sense trying to reassure her with eye contact, so he just repeats, okay? Like it's both a question and a promise. When she nods, he kisses her head briskly and pushes away from her and towards the other end of the cargo container. There are shadows moving beyond the bay doors. He looks the other way in time to see John, himself, skid to a stop and then backpedal for cover behind a support strut. He's almost too slow, though. A pulse blast chews a piece off the strut, and he's got no choice but to dive across the big open space for the cargo container. As he does, the peacekeeper behind the jam bay doors makes the understandable mistake of believing there's only one John in the hold. When she steps into the gap between the doors to take aim, John, future John, out of place John, surges up and fires. The pulse takes her square in the chest and blows her back into the bay. At the same time, the current catches John again, and as he's being torn away, he can hear an echo of his own voice saying, "Nice shot, Pip. It's okay. You're okay." Time. When the music stops, he's back where he started, he thinks. Moya hangs like a teardrop against the nebula. "Are you ready to return now, Commander?" Pilot asks. "You have only half an hour of air remaining." "Yeah, Pilot," John answers. "Reel me in." He goes straight to the galley, rummages noisily until Naranti comes clucking and helps him find what he needs. Then, a consultation with Pilot sends him way down to the lowest tiers. Finally, he heads for their quarters. He runs. He can't feel the tug of the current now, but that doesn't mean it's not still there. The universe knows how to hold a grudge. Erin's in a chair near the portal, rocking a little with the baby under a blanket against her breast. She looks up sharply as he rounds the corner. Old habits are hard to break. He wonders how long it would take for those smile lines to start to show. "Oh, it's you." She relaxes again and shushes Diago when he starts to fuss. "I don't suppose you figured out how to lactate. This boy is chewing a hole in me." He stands in the doorway with his bucket dangling from his hand and grins, probably the goofiest grin ever grinned in the Uncharted Territories. "Sorry, deficient, remember? How could I forget?" But there's the curl of an indulgent smile there to meet his own. She tilts her head up and he bends to kiss her before crouching down to lift the blanket and press his lips to Diago's head. "Hey, fella," he whispers. "You miss me?" "It's only been an hour. Hardly enough time to even notice you were gone." She reaches up, though, and runs her fingers through his hair. Then she frowns and wrinkles her nose. "What is that awful smell?" Leaning forward a bit, she aims the hairy eyeball first at the bucket on the floor and then at John. "Dirt?" "No, not dirt." Settling down on the deck, he drags the bucket closer between his knees. "Soil." With his thumb, he makes three divots in the surface. Then, with his clean hand, he reaches into his mouth, between his cheek and the gums of his top teeth, and very carefully pulls out three seeds. He holds them out so Erin can see them. "Pear seeds," he says. "Pear?" She looks skeptical. "Trust me," he says. "They're delicious." "Where did you get them?" "Pears come from Earth." She raises the eyebrow and looks unconvinced. "That was almost a cycle ago. Are you saying you've carried them all that time in the magical seed pouch in your face?" He meets her gaze, and there must be something there in his own eyes. Some echo of the current, because her expression softens. She lets the question drop, but contemplates him for a long moment before turning back to the bucket and the portion of earth that Moya gave him. "And these pears, they grow in dirt?" "Soil." Very carefully, he places one seed in each of the divots and closes the soil over them. "And we can eat them?" He pushes the bucket towards the portal. "We'll probably have to work out some kind of plant life for them. But for now, he leaves them in the starlight and gets himself up onto his knees so he can lift the blanket again. Someday." Diago is asleep now, but his hand opens to grasp John's finger. John doesn't know how long he's got, so he holds on as tightly and as gently as he can. The end.